Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to the Inside the Huddle podcast in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We are sponsored by Sport Lobster, the sports social network. It's the first podcast of Super Bowl week. We'll look ahead to Super Bowl 49 between the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. We're with you every day this week, building up to the big game. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by Jeff Rimbold. And Jeff, this is a tough one to call. As we set the stage now, looking ahead to this Super Bowl, it's hard to lean one way or the other. We can make a case for both of these teams, couldn't we? There's no firm favorite.
Right now, I would say, you know, there's really nobody that you can point to and say, well, I think this is going to be one of those games where it's one-sided, because certainly both these are great football teams. They really have some similarities, then have some very different ways that they get about, you know, playing their game. So I think it's going to be a great matchup, and as we detail it through the week, we'll get a better feel once we're talking to the players and talking to the coaches about how we think this thing's really going to shake down.
Yeah, first couple of podcasts, we're going to sort of set the scene as we're still here in the UK, and then from Wednesday, we'll be recording these in Arizona. We'll go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday, within a few minutes of the game finishing, myself and Jeff will, you know, fall into each other's arms, embrace, hug, celebrate the end of the season, and then record one more podcast.
Yeah, there is no off season now. You know that.
We'll
we established that last year. It's really amazing to think that it's now all come down really to the last week and then last final preparations, and then it's going to be 60 minutes to decide who's the champion of the world.
The good thing about the Super Bowl, Jeff, I mean, there's many, many good things about being there, but you are seeing firsthand a piece of NFL history. You know, these games will live forever in the lore of pro football. That's what the Super Bowl does. But also in this game, you've got Tom Brady in his sixth game going for a fourth Super Bowl win. Belichick with the chance to tie the great Chuck Knoll for the most wins of a head coach. You've got the Seahawks trying to go back-to-back. I mean, it does feel like it's going to have a pretty grand state.
Well, it certainly does. You know, you look at Pete Carroll. Here's an opportunity to take a team back-to-back. How many guys have ever won two? Mm. You know, again, so there's all kinds of storylines to this. But, it's interesting. When we had Matt Burke on last week, he talked about the championship game and how winning the championship game and getting to the Super Bowl, that really was something that would make your, I guess, your legacy go on forever, is basically the way he described it. You'll go down in history. And you think about this, there's been 49 of these, and if there's 53 players on both teams, so that's 100 players. There's less than 10,000 people, less than 6,000 people on the whole planet that have ever played in this one of these things, and that's an incredible thing.
I'm glad you did the math, sir. I was getting lost. I was getting lost halfway through that. People who are going to Super Bash, of course, can read some of my fine work. You were amused by the fact that I've been writing Super Bowl facts for the toilet walls of Super Bowl.
I just think that is such a shame. Such a great journalist with such wit and wisdom is relegated to the wall of the loo. Right? Now, I don't know. How do you make this? Do you make this like specific to the men's and specific to the women's? I mean, you get a lot of Tom Brady in the women's locker room or bathroom.
I think there's a lot of Tom Brady, and then I've kind of separated it by number one or number two. You know, quick facts or a little bit longer. A little bit longer reading. Somebody actually hit me back on Twitter, and I'm not going to name them because they don't deserve that much credit. They said, this year, Neil, don't write your number on there as well. let's have a look then at these two teams. First of all, Jeff, one of the things I'd like to focus on today, just as we set the scene, and then we will get some questions in the mailbag, is the way these teams turned their seasons around. So you look at Seattle. Let's start with Seattle then. They're the defending Super Bowl champs. Everyone's gunning for them. You know, they lose a couple of players in the offseason, but they don't get devastated necessarily. They lose a few key players. But then they open the year 3-3. And, there was talk of locker room turmoil and Russell Wilson's, you know, not down with the rest of the players. I mean, it's incredible what they managed to do. Was it a massive coaching job from Pete Carroll, or did they just get healthy and get on form?
You know, as you talk to guys who have been through this, they say that it's far, far more difficult. And it's hard to get to, I mean, it's almost impossible to get to one.
Yep.
But to get back to another one the next year is almost impossible because all of the distractions that winning the thing brings and all of the guys who now want to go into the general manager and the head coach and stand in line and say, okay, where's mine? You know, everybody wants to take their bows. Everybody wants to do more, you know, interviews, more commercials. All of it creates distraction through the offseason. And then on top of it, you can't keep all of your players. So, you know, it doesn't take much to upset the chemistry of a locker room, and that's only established over time. So, for example, if, you know, you've got guys who've been with you for 3 or 4 years and you know, grown with the program as it's come up, and now you win one, and then you have to lose some of those guys. Well, new guys have to come in, and they have to find their place, and it's always just kind of, you know, it's a delicate balancing act for coaches and for general managers and everybody involved, and it's not easy to make it back. So I give the, you know, Pete and his staff did a great job of righting the ship.
I read with interest this week some quotes from Russell Wilson, who said that he was on the podium in New York last year, and he said he's a bit of a buzzkill because he said as he was lowering the Vince Lombardi trophy, he'd lifted it up and showed it to the crowd. Literally, he said as he was lowering it, he was thinking, how do we go about doing this next year? So maybe that tells you why they're back there.
Well, I think that's an indication of why they're back there, because that's an indication of what makes that kid tick.
Yeah.
While everybody else was probably thinking about, okay, now if I can, this, my bonus is this much, and if I can just get 2 or 3 sneaker deals and maybe a, you know, he's thinking about how do we get back here?
Yeah.
And it was interesting in that, if you remember, Neil, while we were doing the broadcast last year, the first thing that Pete and he said as they embraced after the game was about coming back the next year.
Yeah.
And so I think that's an indication of why they're back. And, you know, it was really interesting. We talked a little bit to Sebastian Vollmer about what it was like when they were 2-2 and everybody was saying that Belichick was, you know, the game had passed him and Tom was couldn't throw it anymore and yada, yada. But he said they never wavered. They never didn't feel like, you know, they weren't going to be back there, at least banging on the door for another opportunity.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's what great teams have.
Seattle started 3-3, as we said. They lost to San Diego. Their losses were against San Diego, Dallas, and the Rams. Then they got to week 11, and they lost to Arrowhead Stadium. That dropped them to 6-4. They were 3 games back from the Arizona Cardinals in that division, knowing that then they had to face Arizona twice, San Francisco twice, Philadelphia, and the Rams, who were no pushovers. They won the lot, then they won in the playoffs. They haven't lost since then, but looking at those 4 losses, they were all kind of ball control. The teams controlled the clock and ran the football on them, but we don't know whether New England are necessarily going to do that, but there is some evidence there.
Well, you know, again, everybody's always looking for that, you know, that recipe, if you will, to beat the Seahawks, because they're the champions, and you know, that is one way. Now, again, I don't believe that's going to be New England's way. I think New England's going to find they're going to scratch wherever Seattle itches.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be the interesting part of it, and that's the nature of their offense. But, you know, as you look at the Seahawks and you look at that season and you go through it in your mind and you just you think about how they competed, right? And what has Pete always talked about?
Yeah.
When we heard him speak at the press conference last year, what did he talk about?
Competition.
Everything's competition.
Yeah.
And so they never got out of sync. You know, it's all about competing. Let's go play the next game. And one of the things you learn in pro football, and this is all of us who work in pro football share this, whether you play in it, coach in it, whatever, you recognize that a 16-game season is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Yeah.
And there's going to be, basically, you prepare yourself that you're going to have at least 2 crises during the course of a season. And, you know, so you can weather that storm. And I'm sure that these coaches talk to their teams all the time about that.
Well, Gus Bradley, who, you know, I know pretty well, I've managed to spend a bit of time with him, he obviously came out of this Seahawks program. And he said that one of the things he's learned, I mean, he's always talking competition. We've got to get better every day. You know, every practice get better than the last one. It's always that kind of message. But one of the things he talked about was tuning out the noise outside, you know, in relation to the Jags. And it probably applies to to Seattle. It probably applies to what Sebastian Vollmer was saying about how, you know, they never lost their own doubt, and they tune out all the outside noise, which, you know, which comes from the media, because they are stories if these teams struggle.
And that's one of the big jobs that a head coach has to do. He has to be able to keep all 60 guys, basically, with your injured guys and your practice roster guys and everybody. You got to keep all 60 guys with the message. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to keep all 60 guys pointed in the right direction. And, you know, that's what makes these two teams, you know, kind of special, because whether it's every day's competition as it is for Pete, or it's just do your job, which is the mantra that you know, I hear every time I listen to Belichick on the sidelines. He's always talking the same thing. Mm-hmm. Just do your job. Well, you know, when you have a consistent message like that, you can withstand the things that you just pointed out, the being 3-3, you know, the being 6-4 and 3 games behind, all of those things, because you're not focused as much on the outcomes as you are the process.
Seattle got Bobby Wagner back in week 12. Every team has injuries. Every team goes through that. They lost Max Unger for a while. They, you know, everyone goes through that kind of physical adversity of losing players. But getting Bobby Wagner back in week 12 coincided with them not losing again. Do you think that's a factor in their season?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of validity to that, because Bobby Wagner's what? Bobby Wagner's not only a great player, Bobby Wagner's an emotional leader.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, I think he bridges, and this is what linebackers can do for you. So coaches out there that are listening, you know, the linebackers bridge the gap between the front and the secondary. They have the job of playing with the front in the run game and with the back end on the run fits and the pass defense. So typically your great leaders will come from the linebacker category, because they can touch both groups.
Yeah.
So as you talk about great defenses, you know, whether that's Mike Singletary with the 85 Bears, or Ray Lewis with the Baltimore Ravens, or, you know, Brian Urlacher with those great Chicago defenses, typically it's the linebackers where you get your emotional leader. And when they got Bobby Wagner back, they not only got a player, they got a great leader.
New England did start 2-2, as you mentioned. They lost on opening day to the Miami Dolphins. Then they bounced back with a couple of wins against Minnesota and Oakland. And it was really in week 4 at Arrowhead Stadium. Kansas City will think, why aren't we in the Super Bowl? They easily handled New England and they beat Seattle. But
if the receivers would catch a touchdown pass, they might be in the Super Bowl.
41-14, the Patriots lost to the Chiefs, and I thought actually this, I mean, we're always looking for stories, but I thought this got a little bit ridiculous, you know, and I actually said it on Sky Sports at the time. I said, you know, if you think Tom Brady's the problem here, you're barking up the wrong tree. And they called for Brady to be benched, and to me, it was just crazy, and I'm quite glad that they proved people wrong.
Yeah, and you know, look at it. You see, this is where you're, and I'm not going to say you're smarter. You're smarter. But you're also more aware, I guess is the right way, than the average fan, because you understand and you've watched football for so long, you know, and played it, that, you know, it's never one guy or one thing.
No.
It's a combination of things. And you recognize that you've got Gronkowski coming off of major ACL repair.
Yeah, he was slow at the start.
You've got Dante Scarnecchia, who's been a long time. I mean, I'm talking back to the Ron Meyer era in New England, offensive line coach. So you've got, he's retired. Now you got a new guy coaching the offensive line.
You're rotating linemen.
You're trying to find who your linemen are. You've got Browner and Revis now, new guys in the secondary. Mm. Now, granted, they're great players, but you just don't. And this is the thing that Dan Snyder needs to learn in Washington. You just don't throw football players against the wall and think you're going to win championships. It's not, you're not collecting bubblegum cards, football cards, you know, like we did when we were little kids. It takes time, and it takes time for those men to get together and put all their egos aside and learn how they want it done, and that's what's happened.
And do you think they've improved probably as well? I mean, it's a communication area, the offensive line, but the secondary is a communication area. And
two biggest areas. You're exactly right.
That's players there as well.
Yeah, because you can't, if you say, you know, again, just looking at it from a coaching standpoint, you want continuity in coaching and playing, I'm talking about guys playing together and a coach who's worked with his guys in two areas of your football team more than any other. One is the offensive line, and 1A is the secondary, because they have to be on the same page. Because if you're not in the offensive line, you're going to get your quarterback hit, and they don't want Tom Brady hit. And secondly, in the back end on defense, one mistake goes in the end zone. It's front guy makes a mistake, linebacker tackles it. Linebacker makes a mistake, secondary guy tackles it. Secondary guy makes a mistake, you know, the band plays, and it isn't, you know, your favorite song.
Much was made of Belichick saying we're on to Cincinnati. That was their week 5 opponent. You know, he just didn't want to field any of those questions about Tom Brady, but he didn't. Just the way he moved on.
But what did he say at the end of the game? At the end of the game the other night, we're on to Seattle.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. He's got a sense of humor. He's just buried.
He is not. He's got a really sharp sense of humor, and yeah. You know, as you talk to guys who played for him and have coached with him, they say he's a little bit sarcastic and a little knifing with his sense of humor, but very dry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he hardly cracks a smile, but he's got a sense of humor.
They lost really only one meaningful game after that, the against the Packers at Lambeau Field. They lost in week 17 to the Buffalo Bills, but they'd already locked up the number one seed in the AFC then. I guess we'll talk about this as we go further into the week, Jeff, but there's no set style with this team that they did it with, is there? It's moving parts, moving pieces, moving players. Tom Brady and Belichick are the only constants again.
I think the greatest thing you can say about a football team is that they will do whatever it takes to win the football game. Now, I'm not talking about deflating footballs or spot, you know, none of that. I'm not going there. But what I am talking about is where they will do schematically whatever they have to do to win. Because you see so many teams get so wrapped up in we're a West Coast team or we're a power running team or we're this or we're that. And what are you when somebody takes that away?
Yeah.
And the issue, you know, when you look at football teams that can't get to the next level is a lot of times they're so into one thing they can't adjust. Whether that you may be a pressure team on defense and all of a sudden you get a couple corners hurt. Well, now you have no ability to do anything but pressure and guys can't play the scheme. But you look at New England and defensively, offensively, it doesn't matter. They are a chameleon. They will change to whatever they need to be to win the football game.
I thought it was interesting that the early salvos are being fired across each other. You know, much was made of the Richard Sherman and Tom Brady, the tweet that Sherman put out, the "you mad bro" thing, which is going to get, you know, how many times are we going to hear that when we're in Arizona?
A billion.
Too many. But it was interesting. Sherman was quoted back end of last week saying, people sometimes get, because he said that Brady called them a bunch of nobodies. And he said, people sometimes get a skewed view of Tom Brady, that he's just a clean cut, does everything right, and never says a bad word to anyone. We know him to be otherwise. And Jeff, I reckon he's spot on. Don't you think Brady's the ultimate competitor? You look at Brady, I bet he gives some back.
I think what he's trying to do is get him out, pull him out. You know what I'm saying? Draw him out of his burrow, right? Yeah. You know, Richard Sherman's a smart man.
Yes, he is.
But he's also very observant because we've caught, you know, on the sideline camera, we caught a few F-bombs being dropped by Tom. So I'm sure he's a great competitor. He wants to win. You don't go from being a sixth-round draft choice picked in the, you know, the first part of the supplemental rounds compensatory picks and become a Hall of Famer like he has unless you're a great competitor.
Julian Edelman said that...
There's another competitor there.
Yeah, and Julian Edelman said that Brady was... you know, he doesn't care about the fact he's played in 5 Super Bowls. It's just about the next one. I mean, he really is a fierce competitor. We had him at the fan rally at Trafalgar Square. So when they played the Rams, 2012, that would have been. And he came up on stage with all the others and I introduced him. It goes a big roar and then it goes quiet as I'm about to ask the first question. Somebody shouts from the audience, "You suck!" I turned to the crowd and went, "Listen, you don't want to get this guy riled up ahead of Sunday because, you know, one thing he doesn't do is suck." Brady turns to me and goes, I've had much worse. It's absolutely fine. And you could tell he just deals with it, and he actually probably relishes it.
Oh, you imagine what it's like when he walks in the stadium. I mean, when he goes in there, Miami, he goes down there, and, you know, I'm sure he hears everything from, you know, about Giselle to, you know, being drafted in the sixth round to, the, you know, to his UGG commercials to everything.
But he does have this clean-cut image, which I don't think is probably true.
Well, really. I think there's a lot of truth in it. I think he's a good kid.
He doesn't get in trouble off the field. Yeah,
he grew up in San Mateo, California, and I had a chance to meet the guy that was really his quarterback whisperer.
Yep.
It's a funny story. This gentleman who's now passed away coached Tom's sister in softball at College of San Mateo, and then that's how the association happened. And Tom would go back every offseason and work with this gentleman, Larry Owens, who worked here in NFL Europe with the London Monarchs and the Scottish Claymores, was the head football coach at College of San Mateo, and that's how I got to know what was going on with this guy. And, you know, Tom would go back. Now, you're talking about a guy who wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And the first thing he does in the offseason, not going on holiday, he goes back to San Mateo and works with his private quarterback coach. You know, and so, you know, those are the kinds of indications that you look for about the kind of competitor this guy is. And, you know, Edelman's the same way. I mean, Danny Amendola's the same way. Gronkowski, for all of his wackiness, is the same way. He loves to win. He loves to compete. And I think that's the common thread that runs through the Patriots. There are two things that define, to me, the Patriots. Number one, and this is a stat that the NFL had. I haven't seen it in the last couple of years, so I want to, you know, I'll just put it in past tense. But I know that there was a stretch of time that the NFL kept track of the number of college graduates on each roster.
Yeah.
And for a stretch of years, the Patriots always had the highest number of college graduates. So they're all intelligent and, you know, they're finishers.
Yeah.
And then two, they're great competitors.
Yeah, I think they always seem to drag those underachieving and intelligent players. But then actually, if you look at both these teams, they turn over stones that
other teams don't.
Right?
Other teams won't. You're exactly right. I mean, as you go through these rosters, and this is really fun for me. Every time we do a broadcast, I love it because, you know, to me, it's the fun stuff of the NFL. You look at the rosters and you say, okay, how'd they get these guys? You know, Richard Sherman, what round? Oh, boy. Tom Brady, what round? Oh, wow, that's low.
Yeah.
You know, Julian Edelman, seventh round.
Yeah.
Danny Amendola, free agent. And you got to start going through the rosters.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Michael Bennett. I mean, yeah. Michael Bennett's a free agent.
Brandon
free
Browner
agent.
Comes down from Canada.
Yeah, Brandon Browner has to go to Canada. Everybody, you look through this roster. Now, they got some first rounders out there, right?
Yeah.
But you look at a guy like a Michael Bennett. Now, he's one of the best defensive linemen in the National Football League. And he didn't get drafted. He made Seattle as a practice roster guy, got plucked off the practice roster, goes to Tampa Bay, and then goes back to Seattle as a free agent. You know, and again, that speaks to what these teams, John Schneider, you know, and Belichick on the other side, because Belichick does everything in New England, those guys have done to find players. And they, you know what? It's really interesting, Neil. We talk all the time, you and I talk all the time about the profile, right? Because that's what Coach Vermeil used to say. I want a specific profile.
Yep.
Well, what do you want in Seattle? What's the profile of a Seattle football player? Highly competitive, can run. Those are two things that they can all do by position. They can all run, and they're all highly competitive. New England. What's their profile? Smart, because they run very sophisticated schemes on offense and defense. Exactly. Versatility. You guys that can play more than one position. Guys that can do more than one thing. And, you know, that's to me, that's great organizational structure when you know exactly what you want and you only take what you want.
John Schneider learned from Ron Wolf, the great Packers general manager. And I saw a quote, it was around Super Bowl last year, actually, where Ron Wolf said, football's a big man's game. And I thought, actually, well, you look at what the kind of secondary that Seattle built as well. So that kind of played into it as well, isn't it? But they are very versatile.
Yeah, and then the scheme fits the personnel. Now, the other way, you look at New England, and, you know, Belichick has enough acumen and coaching background and depth in his playbook and all those things to be able to kind of morph around from one thing to the other. But you can see when they're really comfortable, when they're really playing well, they have a specific kind of guy. We talked, you and I just had a conversation, I think it was a couple of days ago, about, you know, the receivers. Why was Emmanuel Sanders coveted so much in New England when he was a free agent and then also when he was coming out of college? Because he's very smart.
Yep.
And he understands how to sit routes down and what coverage is and all that stuff. But they had drafted, they took a flyer on a couple guys last couple years that were incredibly talented, you know, run fast, jump high guys, big, tall, long guys, that are no longer there because they couldn't process the information inside the offense.
Get in the right place at the right time. Let's go to the mailbag then. Take a couple of your questions before we wrap up our first Super Bowl edition of the Inside the Huddle podcast. This is a question from Jonathan Justin, who says, what is the best player matchup that no one is talking about? Well, they'd all get talked about in Super Bowl week, otherwise we run out of things to talk about. But, I mean, is there, I mean, we're going to talk about Gronkowski against that secondary. Is there one that stands out to
you? As a one that nobody talks about, I think the one that's intriguing to me is, it's actually a combination of matchups because it'll come in a lot of different forms. But when you look at Cliff Averill and you look at Michael Bennett and you look at Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer, I think those are going to be critical matchups because for the Seahawks, their best pressure, their best pressure is applied by Averill, and by Michael. And for New England, those two tackles have got to play well.
That would have been my answer as well, but I would go a little bit further as well and add Brian Staak, the center of New England, to that
mix. If he's healthy.
Because on nickel downs, they bring Bennett inside, and we've seen Brady upset before by rush up the middle, so I think that could be a key.
That's where he does not like pressure the most. And again, if Staak can play, then Wendell can go back to guard, and then they're much, much better.
One more question here then. The Ugly Game says, how much difference would a win or loss make to the Belichick and Brady legacies? And then he adds, is this Super Bowl the last shot for them? I don't think it's the last shot for them, but
I don't think it's the last shot, but I think that's a good observation.
Yeah.
Because now you're putting yourself in rarefied air.
Yeah.
You know, for your Tom Brady, you and Terry Bradshaw become, correct me on this, because you're
right,
the second.
Bradshaw's got the most, Bradshaw and Montana are
four apiece, correct?
Four,
correct. Right. So then they would become, you know, guys that have won four.
Yeah.
Belichick has already won more playoff games than anybody in the history of the National Football League. But another ring, that again solidifies his greatness. Now, some of that stuff will always be, there will always be people who will try and throw, you know, the deflated ball thing, the Spygate, all that stuff against the wall. But you cannot deny the guy's greatness. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to deny his greatness.
Would they put any weight, we certainly would as media, you know, if there, will there be extra pressure on Brady and Belichick? They probably won't. They're just looking at one game. But they won their first three. They won't want to lose their next three, will they?
You know, I think that's really us.
Yeah.
You know, I would hazard to guess that conversation never comes up. And I don't think that conversation even comes up at the most private moments with their greatest confidants. I can't see Bill Belichick or Tom Brady sitting in a room, even if it's with their families or their best friends or whatever, and go, you know, I don't want to win three, then lose three.
No, I don't think they think that way.
Great champions never think that way, or rarely think that way. They think about the opportunity that's in front of them, not the possibility of, you know, a negative.
Do you think experience will help these coaches as they go through this week?
Absolutely. Haven't been there. And they each have their own. It's interesting. Seattle shows up first. Seattle has the shortest trip.
Yeah.
They're on Pacific time, but they show up first. Why? I'll guarantee I know why. Pete wants to give them some flexibility to go out and have fun. So bring them in a day early. Let them have some time early in the week to get out and enjoy being a part of the Super Bowl. And then, you know, when the time comes, compete. you know, Belichick, different deal. He's bringing him in a day late. He would bring him in probably as late as he can get him in because he doesn't want him around all that media and all that stuff that he sees as just distractions.
It's just noise to him.
Yeah,
right?
Noise. Yeah, like you say, you got to tune out the noise. And again, so you look at the two contrasting styles of coaches. I think that's one of the great matchups, if you will, of the game.
All right, Jeff, good stuff. We'll be back tomorrow on Inside the Huddle we'll probably bring you a little bit more news around Super Bowl, but also look at both these coaches in more detail, Pete Carroll and Bill Belichick. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's a USP content production. Say bye-bye, Jeff.
Aloha.